Good evening. Thanks for being here. I appreciate the invitation to be here. Appreciate your efforts this week. And hope it'll be beneficial for us to be here tonight. It already has been. And anyway, again, I appreciate the invitation. Did you pay attention to what we sang about tonight so far? Was there something that held all those songs together? I don't know. We didn't plan that out, but it worked out well, Sam. I heard Sam was leading singing, and it was a last-minute thing. He was looking up hymns, and I suggested the invitation song and all the songs about footprints of Jesus, anywhere with Jesus, where he leads, I'll follow. We're going to talk about that tonight in talking about Peter or Simon and what he had to go through to follow Jesus. And sometimes when I go preach elsewhere, it's often a series about worship and song. And a lot of times if I have the opportunity, I'll have the song leader on Sunday morning suggest some songs to him that are all the same topic. And I ask people, what did we sing about? And often they don't know. That means we're not paying attention to what we sing, and we should be. It's like all the friend songs, like, you know, there's a lot of songs that mention Jesus as a friend, and if you're looking for that, it's pretty obvious. But if we're just singing and not paying attention, you know, we miss that. And we should miss that, because we're supposed to be teaching and admonishing each other with that. It's not about singing. It's about understanding. Anyway, back to our topic tonight. We're calling it Simon's Sifting by Satan. That's a lot of S's. I learned a big word. That's alliteration. I've heard people say that, and I looked it up to see if that's what it meant, and I was looking for I-L, but it's A-L. Anyway, that's when you have, you know, a bunch of, like, Peter Piper picked a pack of pickles. Well, all the sounds the same, which is, it doesn't really accomplish anything. The reason I did it is because it's in this verse. Luke 22:31, and the Lord said, that is working up there. The Lord said, indeed, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. And he called him Simon. He called him Simon a couple of times, and we'll look at that. What else he had to say here, but first of all, I'd never thought about it before, but I looked up, we usually call him Peter. And I wondered why, you know, he calls him Simon here. It wasn't just to get a lot of S's in the sentence. And I noticed that Jesus called him Simon almost all the time. The only two times, and I looked quickly, so I might have missed something, but with computers, it's a lot easier than it used to be. But he called him Peter when he said, Simon, you, and then he said, you know, upon this rock I'll build my church. You are called Peter, and Cephas, he's called that, which also means rock. So he made a point there. And then in this passage in Luke, in Luke's account at least, he calls him Peter. But most of the Gospels call him Peter, except for the Gospel of John. It calls him Simon Peter most of the time, and or Simon more than it calls him Peter. Then when you get to Acts, and I don't know if there's any value to this, but it's just stuff I learned. After you get to Acts, he's never referred to as Simon. He's just Peter from then on. And so, anyway, in this verse, Simon, Simon. And that's something we read a lot in the Bible. And I don't know if we stop to pay attention to it. Sometimes, I've read this passage before and didn't realize, well, he said that twice. And thought about that. And people have various ideas. I don't know if anybody's sure of why that's done. Some said it's because it's an endearing thing to say a name twice. But to me, I mean, Jesus said it here. And you remember who else he did that with? Remember when he was at the house of Mary and Martha and Lazarus in there, and Martha was cooking and Mary wasn't? Martha, Martha, you know, you're too concerned. You're concerned about all this stuff, but Mary's chosen the good part. And then when who we usually call Paul, but was first Saul, on the road to Damascus, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And so in those cases, it sounds like, and I didn't find any others, though there may be more, But I wasn't looking to be comprehensive. But it sounds like they have something pretty important, that they're doing something wrong, or something's about to go wrong, or they've been doing something wrong. You know, it's like somebody, David. You know, if I hear that, it's not usually a good thing that's going to come after it. And there is probably, and there's some difference in those are proper names, but why do you call me Lord, Lord, and you don't do what I say? That may be different. And in, at least in the King James Version, those people like the prestige of being called Rabbi, Rabbi. And verily, verily, or truthfully, truthfully, I say to you. That doesn't seem to be the same thing, at least in the quick overview of that, is, you know, Simon, Simon, you know, you're going to have some trouble here. And so he explains that Satan has asked for you, which sounds kind of like Job, you know, the book of Job, that Satan asked God, can I cause problems to Job? Because the only reason he's serving you is because you've been so good to him. But, and so, you know, and that's a strange, that's certainly what it says, but it's, you don't get many pictures of that, about Satan communicating with God about asking permission to do something, but it's the same here. Satan has asked for you, and he wants to sift you as wheat. And it's hard if we didn't, what comes right after this sort of explains what Jesus meant, but it's kind of hard to tell, because sifting wheat would be you're trying to get rid of all the bad stuff and get the good stuff. But this is clearly sifting in a bad way. Like perhaps he wants to separate him from the others who are doing what's right. And you don't really sift wheat anyway. It's a, you know, it's winnowing. You read that about that in the Bible. First of all, you know, after you gather the wheat, you have to thresh it, get the husk off the seeds. Then you have a threshing floor, a hard, flat place, and you beat it. And then you winnow it. You throw it up in the air and let the wind blow the chaff away. And then you have the wheat left. And if there's no wind, you use a fan. And, of course, that's what combines do. They're combination harvesters. They do all that. But it was a big deal and a lot of work back then. And so, but to separate the wheat was not actually what we'd think of as sifting, you know, pouring something through a screen or sieve or something like that. But anyway, whatever it means, whatever the illustration was, we might say he's going to put you through the ringer. But that's an old saying, too. Most people don't understand what that means. And I couldn't think of a newer one. But, you know, he's going to try to get you. He already had Judas. And by the way, this is when he's saying this is at the Last Supper or right after it. And so that'll come into play later on, the timing of all this. And then Jesus, furthermore, it's a two-part thing. He's going to sift you. And it's clearly implied that Peter is going to go somewhere else spiritually, but he's going to return. He's going to go off the rails a bit, but you know, Satan has asked for you. But Jesus said, but I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, and the me here in the New King James is in italics, because most Bibles just say when you've returned or something like that, strengthen your brethren. So he's going to go off, but he's coming back. But it's Satan trying to get him to, you know, go off the rails and stay that way. And have returned to, that's just one word. The King James uses you, when you are converted, which, you know, means you've changed directions. NIV, when you have turned back. When you have turned again. So the idea, Satan's going to get you to go the wrong way, but you're coming back. And return is a good way, probably the most simple way to say that of all these to me. All right? So there's a sifting, and there's a leaving, and then, but he's coming back. And so what we're going to talk about, our first point is the sifting itself. When we read what happened next, but he said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. And so Peter says, I'm going to follow you. And in fact, we'll read John's account of this, and he talked about following him. But I'm ready to go with you to prison. Because he has clearly said you're going to leave, or implied that, and you're going to return. He says, I'm not going anywhere. I'm ready to go with you wherever it is, if it's prison, if it's death, I'm not going anywhere. Then he said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. We'll look at this in the other accounts in Matthew. Jesus said, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written, then he quotes from Zechariah, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. So this happened to all of them to some degree. But after I have been raised, I will go before you into Galilee. And remember that, because that's going to come up later too. That he's, you know, you're all going off the rails. But I will, when after I'm raised, I'll go before you, I'll see you in Galilee. Then Peter's response to that was, even if everybody else does this, I'm not going to. Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. I'm not going anywhere, is what he's saying. Assuredly, I say to you that this night before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times. Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. So Peter stuck to his guns. He was pretty confident. He was too confident, as we know. And so said all the disciples. And it's one of those things where Peter gets the, because he was the most outspoken one, he's the one who's remembered for that. But they all said that. It's sort of like Thomas. You know, Thomas was the doubting one. But it was because he wasn't there the week before. When the rest of them saw Jesus, he had to show him his hands and his feet too. It says, you know, it's really me. he even ate something to show, you know, I'm real. But, you know, because Thomas wasn't there, Jesus made the point, well, you believe because you have seen, but blessed are those who believe and have not seen, because that's by faith. But the others were, you know, the same way. You remember when the women came from the tomb? Until we saw angels, the tomb was empty. They thought it was idle tales. They didn't believe it. They didn't believe it until they saw it. And so, anyway, Peter gets a lot of the blame, and he deserves it. But it wasn't much different with the rest of them. And so in Mark, as usually, is similar to Matthew. Even if all are made to stumble, yet I will not be. Jesus said the same thing about you'll deny me three times. But he spoke more vehemently. You know, he sort of raised the bar and said, no, I'm serious. If I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And they all said likewise. Then in John's account, of course, which differs, in John's account here, beginning in chapter 13, after the Last Supper, remember that John has this whole, what I call the farewell speech of Jesus, that's chapter 14, 15, 16, and 17, that none of the other writers record. And it's after all of that that then he goes to the Garden of Gethsemane and prays, and then right after that he's arrested. Okay, so that's the timing here. And so Jesus, in his farewell speech to the disciples, little children, I shall be with you a little while longer. You will seek me, and as I said to the Jews, where I'm going, you cannot come. So now I say to you. So I've already told the Jews, and I'm telling you, you know, I'm going somewhere, and the whole point of that speech was I'm not going to be around. And then some of the side points were, I'm not leaving you alone. The Holy Spirit will come. You know, you have access to the Father still through me. It's all kinds of things. But the main point is getting them to understand what even at that late date they did not understand, that he's really going to die. He's not going to be around. So Simon Peter, we drop down a few verses. Where are you going? Jesus answered, where I'm going, you cannot follow. They're talking about following him. You cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterward. Remember that. Peter said, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I'll lay down my life for your sake. Jesus said, will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly, I say to you, the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me three times. there's a bit of different information, as usual, in those various gospel accounts. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now we've jumped to John 18. After the farewell speech, after the arrest, when he is taken to the house of the high priest, you know, late at night. And so Peter and John followed. And then we drop down a few verses, so we're not reading the whole thing. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold. And they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Then several verses later, after going into the trial scene of what was going on with Jesus and the high priest, now what's going on outside in the courtyard is Peter still standing there warming himself. Therefore they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" So he was there when they went to arrest him, this person. And he's a relative. "Aren't you the guy that tried to kill my cousin," or whoever he was? You know, he wasn't aiming for the ear. And, you know, "Weren't you, didn't I see you with him?" Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. And then Luke's account tells us something the rest of them don't. Immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. So he was there watching what would happen to the Lord, and the Lord turned and looked at him. And then Peter remembered his words, how he had said, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." So Peter went out and wept bitterly. Satan was sifting him like wheat. And you know, despite his confidence, he did exactly what he repeatedly said he wouldn't do. And so the good part of it is that he returned, as Jesus said. And to see that, we go to John chapter 21. And there's, we'll talk more about it as we go, but there's a connection between the Last Supper and, you know, the last night Jesus talked to his disciples at any length, and this particular appearance at the Sea of Tiberias, which is the Sea of Galilee. It tells us there were seven disciples there, you know, Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, James and John, who are the sons of Zebedee, and two others unnamed. So he appeared to seven of them. And then Peter said, "I'm going fishing." They said, "We're going to." So they went fishing, and we won't read all of this. And when the morning had come, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, "Children, have you any food?" They said, "No." And he said, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find something." So they did that, and they were not able to draw in the net because of the amount of fish, the multitude of fish. All right, so things like that have happened before. And so John says, "Well, it's the Lord." And Peter realizes that, and he put on his outer garment, and he jumped in the sea and swam to shore. They were about 200 cubits away. And John came dragging, the other disciples came dragging the net full of fish. As soon as they had come to land, they saw a fire of coals there and fish laid on it and bread. So Jesus already had a fire going and was already cooking some stuff. He told them, "Bring some of the fish that you have caught." So they dragged the net in, 153 fish, and it was amazing that the net was not broken because they were all large fish. And so Jesus said, "Come and eat breakfast." Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" knowing that it was the Lord. And that's, I mean, that's there for a reason. I mean, like I don't ask you people who I know, "Who are you?" because I know who you are, but there's more to it than that. This is like they wanted to ask him stuff. Like, you know, "How'd you get here?" Or, you know, "We haven't seen you since, you know, the last time Thomas was here." We'll talk about that. and now you're here. Just like he said, by the way, I'll go before you into Galilee. But anyway, they didn't ask him everything he probably wanted to. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and likewise the fish. And it says, this is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. Meaning his disciples as a group, though not all 11 or 12 are here. But, you know, the majority of them are here. I guess they had a consensus. Or whatever you call it, a quorum. You had enough for it to be official. And it's the third time. So the first time was resurrection night. You know, when he appeared to them in the upper room, and when he and Thomas wasn't there. The next time was a week later at the same place, and Thomas was there. This is the third time. And we don't know the timing exactly of this. Most people think it's within a few weeks of the resurrection. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, he calls him Simon. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And he said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, feed my lambs. And I'm sure you all are familiar with this story. Jesus asked him the same thing again. Do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. Okay, and so you're probably aware of something that is not very clear in our translations, is that Jesus is asking one thing, and Simon says, well, you know, I love you, and he's talking about something else, because they're two completely different words for love. And we don't want to spend a lot of time on that tonight. That's another sermon, at least by itself. But the word that is used most of the times, the important word for love in the New Testament, has nothing to do with emotions or liking somebody or any. That's how you love your enemies. It simply means you prioritize. And so since our enemies have souls, and God loves everybody, we should love our enemies in that sense. And we should love God, and we should love each other in that sense. And it's the other word, the word that Philadelphia comes from, that it's that kind of, it's an affectionate love. It's you like somebody, or you want to be friends with somebody. It's a different kind. There's something that you get from a relationship. You know, the other kind of love is, it can just be one way. Your enemies aren't going to love you. We have to love them. We have to be concerned about their welfare, even though they're not concerned about ours. So what Jesus is saying is, and there's multiple ways to interpret what the point is, but the way most people see it, at least as far as I understand, is that Jesus is saying, do you put me first? You know, am I first on your priority list? And he's saying, well, you know, I really like you. I have affection for you. You mean a lot to me. And Jesus said, no, I'm asking, and then he says, feed my sheep or tend my sheep. No, I'm asking, do you love me in the sense that you're supposed to love God and put me first? Well, you know I like you. You know you mean a lot to me. I know you already know that you mean a lot to me. And so he said, tend my sheep. Then the third time, Jesus uses the word that Peter has been using. So you're saying that you have feelings for me, that you respect me, that you like me, but you're not willing to say that you love me. And Peter said, he was grieved, and he said, because Jesus said, do you, because he has dropped down to Peter's word that grieved him. And he said, Lord, you know all things. And you know I'm telling you the truth, and I'm not willing to say that I put you first. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. All right, so thinking about all of that, and I've read that because there are three questions here, that's sort of the counterpart to the three denials of Peter. Because this is, as far as we know, and it seems very probable, that this is the first time that Jesus has talked to Peter one-on-one since they had that conversation that we just read. That you want to follow me? You're going to die with me? No, you're going to deny me three times before morning. And that's what happened. And so Jesus now, and again, Jesus said a lot after that, but that was the farewell speech to all the disciples. And, you know, there were some words about Peter with the arrest and the put your sword away and that kind of thing. We didn't come here to fight. But no one-on-one discussion since his denial, since he failed in what he promised to do. And I'm usually skeptical about connecting. A lot of times people are trying to find connections in the Bible that don't seem valid to me. They're just looking for something cool. And you know, trying to look what I discovered. But we'll keep on with this, with that in mind, with skepticism. But then Jesus' response, feed my lamb. Do you love me more than these? There's a lot of discussion of different ideas about what? Most people think it's these other disciples or, I mean, these fish, you know, the fishing business. It doesn't really say. And that's a lot of times our Bibles don't. It's like when you have returned and the New King James supplies the word me, it puts an object there. Because we like to return to what? Return from where? And in Greek, that a lot of times they don't do that. But, you know, do you love me more than these? It doesn't really tell us these what. But anyway, Jesus's response to his answers each time was about, well, you tend my lambs, feed my sheep. Which sounds like, you know, when you have returned, you strengthen your brethren. Okay, so this seems to have maybe some more legitimacy, but there's a connection here. There's also, I will go before you to end that discussion about you'll all stumble because of me this night, because you're going to fulfill Zechariah's prophecy that strike the shepherd, the sheep will scatter. But after I'm raised, I will go before you into Galilee. And it's where they were. It's the third time he appeared to them. It's the first time they've been in Galilee. The other two appearances were in Jerusalem. So now they're back up north in Galilee. And this is what he was talking about, that I'll be there in Galilee. And then another subtle thing, that Peter was warming himself around a fire of coals. And when Jesus was on shore, there was a fire of coals there. That's the only two times in the whole Bible that word is used, both by John. And so John's making connections here in his recording of this story. And so that seems logical, doesn't it? That this is Jesus talking to Peter about, you know, last time we had a conversation. You remember that? You're going to go to jail. You're going to die with me. Even if everybody else left me, you weren't going to do it. And then I said, no, you're going to die with me. And you said, no, I won't. You were forceful about it. And so this seems to be the way Jesus brought up the topic. And Peter, by his responses to when Jesus said, do you love me in the sense that you put me above everything else? And he wouldn't say that. It sounds like he realized that he hadn't lived up to what he said. He felt bad about it. And as it goes on, it's even more clear that these things are connected. So what happened after this, after the third time he was grieved? Well, he explained, Jesus talking to Peter, most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. So you used to go where you wanted to go, but the day's coming when somebody's going to take you where you do not want to go. And they're going to gird you, or bind you, tie you up. And that might not be clear to us, but Peter understood it, and John explained what he was taught. This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. But he's talking about Peter dying. It's not just, you know, you're going to be taken to prison. No, you're going to die. And when he had spoken this to him, he said, follow me. And so we got these two components here. We're talking about death, which, by the way, is what you said you were willing to do. And we're talking about following me, which is exactly what you said you weren't going anywhere. You wouldn't have to return to me because you weren't going to leave me. And so remember John's account that is talking about laying, you know, I will lay down my life. Oh, will you lay down your life? No, you're going to deny me. And what brought that up? Jesus said, I'm going somewhere and you all can't follow me. And Peter says, why can't I follow you? And Jesus said, oh, you can't follow me now, but you will follow me later. And that had special meaning. I mean, it, you know, many of the disciples met a similar fate, but it had special meaning for Peter that, okay, so you weren't going to die with me then, but, you know, you will later. You're gonna die because of me, and you will return, and you will follow. So we add that to our list of connections. Why can I not follow? And the counterpart to that is, well, no, another will carry you to your death, and going right along with it, I'll lay down my life for you. He said, well, you follow me because that's what I'm gonna do for you, and that's what I've done for you at this point in this conversation. I died for you. You promised to do it before and you didn't come through. Well, you're going to. And that's what I meant when I said, you can't follow me now, but you will later. At least that's at least part of what he meant. And so that's pretty powerful. And, you know, it reminds us of all kinds of passages. If you save your life, you'll lose it. If you lose your life for my sake, you know, you'll save it. You cannot be my disciple unless you take up your cross and follow me. And that applies to all kinds of things. And in most cases, it doesn't mean giving up, you know, ceasing to live. But in some cases, it does. And Peter wasn't willing to do it, even though he'd heard all that stuff Jesus said. He wasn't willing to take up his cross back then. And neither were the rest of them. But Peter was the one who promised the most. And so it's like, you know, you can't follow me now, but you will later. That's sort of like, remember when James and John and their mother came to Jesus? And they wanted to be, when Jesus became the king, they wanted to be one on his right hand and one on his left. And you remember what Jesus said to them? He said, do you want to drink of the cup I'm going to drink from? Do you want to be baptized or immersed in what is going to immerse me? And of course, with visions of a kingdom and drinking out of gold glasses and being bathed in glory, they said, yes, we do. And he said, oh, you will. And so, Peter, you know, I'll follow you now. Well, no, you won't now, but you will later. And anyway, there's, fortunately, you know, we don't run into situations where people are threatening our lives because of Christ. But stuff comes up that scares us, like pandemics, for example. And there are still people I've heard of, I don't know them, that aren't assembling with saints still to this time. And it's probably because they're, well, I know they're streaming church, and that sort of became like an okay. I mean, that itself caused some problems. And you know, there's no, I'm not saying we should not be careful and we shouldn't be logical and sensible, but at some point, after a year or two, don't you think that these passages where Jesus says, do not fear what can kill your body, that has to start applying. It's not all parallel to this. Nobody's going to crucify us. But it just, you know, it's noteworthy what, when you have people who think they would die for the cause of Christ if it ever came to that, who, you know, have just quit doing the most important thing, getting together with other saints to motivate them and encourage each other and edify each other and break bread together. And they're just giving up on that. But if it came to dying for Christ, we'd be willing to do that. That's not very realistic. It's like we'll die on a mountain, but we won't climb on a molehill. You know, we won't go up there. But if we had to come to a mountain, yeah, I'd climb that. And that's serious stuff. I mean, Jesus, you know, this world, we don't belong here. We have a better place to go. And of all people who should be, you know, we should be the least scared of what can happen to us on this earth. It doesn't mean we have to be dumb or anything. And we have to be careful. We have to be concerned about other people. But at some point, these verses should start really meaning something. Unless you're willing to take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy to be my disciple. And, you know, I just can't imagine facing the Lord in the judgment day. Well, how come the last 10 years of your life you didn't go to church? Well, we were streaming and you know, there was a virus. What do you think he's going to have to say to that? You know, it's probably what we can read, you know. I died while you were still sinners. You know, you didn't deserve my death for you, but I did it. You know, a person might give his life for somebody really good, but I gave my life for you when you were no good. And you think that's a big deal, that should just, you know, you have to change your whole spiritual life and ignore the things that are supposed to do you good? Because you're scared of something. Peter was scared that night. And he realized he made a mistake. And he's, you know, Jesus is telling him, yeah, okay, you're going to have to follow me now. You didn't do it before, but I said you'll do it afterward, and it's going to come. And then, finally, Peter's response to all that, his reaction, there's lessons there too. Then Peter turning around when he finds out, okay, I'm going to die, and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who, of course, is John. That's how he's been describing himself this whole time, as you already know. And Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? That, you know, well, okay, I'm going to die. Well, what about him? And parents, why did kids ask a question like that? Well, what about him? It's because you told them to clean their room or something. Well, what about him? Here's the answer. Parents, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. It doesn't matter what I tell him or her. It's what I'm telling you now. And that's what you need to do. But it's not just a lesson for parents. It's a lesson for any time we think it's not fair is an excuse to not abound in the Lord's work. Well, it's just not fair. I do more around this church than anybody else does. Why do I have to keep doing this if nobody else is going to chip in? And it can be 100 different things. You know, I try hard, and I have all this tragedy in my life, or all this sickness, or all these problems, or whatever, and it just doesn't seem to go. It just isn't fair. And that's what's going on here. And, you know, it doesn't matter what happens to him. You do what I say. You follow me. And so that's another thing. What do you think if we're in the judgment day and Jesus is the judge? Well, why didn't you do more? Well, it just wasn't fair, you know. You don't want to talk to him about what's fair, because he has a response to that. Because he gave his life for us. And, you know, you follow me. That was a lesson here for Peter. And it's the lesson for all of us. And, of course, it goes on to say that, you know, a saying went out because that's how, I guess there's another lesson. You know, don't believe everything you hear because stories can change. That John was going to live until Jesus came back. Of course, that didn't happen. Jesus didn't say that. But that's the way the story got out. But anyway, we need to be followers of Jesus. And we're not going to be in this situation that Peter was in of course, it's not all parallel. Well, not there with, you know, one of his disciples who, you know, when he was fishing and he told them, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men, Peter was willing to do that. We give him some credit. And he was outspoken, but he was a leader. And many times he said the wrong thing, and Jesus rebuked him multiple times. Like when he said, who do people say that I am? And they said, well, you're Isaiah, you know, or John the Baptist, or various answers. Who do you say that I am? Peter is the first one to speak up. Well, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then a few verses later, Christ tells him he's going to die, and Peter says, no, you're not. Like he was going to not let that happen. And that's when he didn't call him Simon or Peter. He said, get behind me, Satan. And so Peter had some rough spots, let's say. But, you know, he was motivated. And that's why the first half of the book of Acts, he's the main character. And he'd learned his lesson. He had returned. And he learned a big lesson by his mistake. So Simon's sifting by Satan, that was the bad part. I guess there's another lesson. There's hope for us. You know, he may have sifted us, and we've done things that we shouldn't do. We haven't done things that we should do, but we can return like Peter did. Let's open our hymn books to number 185. Who will follow Jesus? I think we sang this Wednesday as an invitation song, but we're singing it again tonight. Is it's right on point. If you need to do something to obey the Lord, follow him, maybe you've been sifted and just need prayers or something. If we can help you in some way, if you come to the front, somebody will assist you as we stand and sing.